High Vibe Nation is live. Welcome to the High Vibe Nation, where we have set out to raise the vibration of every human being on the planet. Your hosts on this journey are Sherry Gideons and Pamela Aubrey. So let's join them now in their current interview with a high vibing individual.
Hello and welcome to the High Vibe Nation, a revolution of love. It's time to raise your vibration and live your best life now. I'm your host, Sherry Gideons, and this is my co-host, Pamela Aubrey.
Welcome, everyone. And welcome to our special guest this evening, Dr. Steve Taubman. He is a best-selling author and a world-class speaker who has dedicated his life to showing people how to thrive through challenges. Welcome to the show.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much. In the presence of such conscious, beautiful, brilliant women, I'm all about it. This is fabulous.
Well, thank you.
Great to have you. Thank you very much.
So
you know that we love to talk about being high vibe on this show. So tell us, what does it mean to you to be high vibe?
Boy, I think that's the nature of life. You know, for me, I'm always observing where are my vibes, right? I think each and every one of us vibrate at different levels at different times. And I think there's sort of a continuum or sort of a range within which most of us live. And some people spend a lot of their time in a very low vibration for most of their lives, and they are sick often and depressed and anxious and all. And I grew up depressed and anxious and low self-esteem and all of that. So I started working toward raising my vibration through not just what I think, because I think many of us think it's just about the thoughts in our heads. And I think that's important, but also learning how to be quiet, learning how to gather energy from the world around me, learning how to shut off the negativity and tune into the positivity. So for me, having high vibrations basically means that, you know, if you're vibrating at the right level, then you're healthy and you're happy most of the time. And if you're not, you're at least conscious enough to recognize when you're slipping away.
Love that answer. That's so awesome. And I love the field that you're in too, just based on what you described, because you have the ability to help so many people, you know, let go of these negative beliefs and, you know, these, like I like to say, false truths and these struggles that we set ourselves up for that, you know, we don't even realize we're doing it. And one of the things I read when I was listening to what you do is you talk about unhypnosis and that, you know, we're all hypnotized. Tell us a little bit what that means.
The backstory there is interesting too. So I'll explain how my first book was written. And the book, of course, is called Unhypnosis. Okay. And what happened was because after my chiropractic career, which went on, you know, for many years, I sold my practice. I took a year off. I ended up becoming a stage hypnotist. And I was performing all over the world, and I became the official hypnotist for MTV Spring Break.
Oh, wow.
Dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
Interesting.
So I'm in Jamaica, and I've got an audience of over 2,000 kids on the beach on this, and I'm on a big stage, and I've got 25 kids on stage being hypnotized. And hey, Christopher, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Chris.
Good to see you, Chris. So I'm on stage, right? And I've got all these people doing all the things you've seen on hypnosis shows, I'm sure. I've got them milking a cow and conducting an orchestra. I've got one guy thinks he's pregnant.
Wow.
Got another guy thinks he's the father. And in the midst of the show, I decide I'm going to try something new. So I take one of my subjects and I say, when you wake up, three things are going to happen. I said, number one, you don't believe that you're hypnotized even though you are. I said, number two, this is the worst show you've ever seen, and you're aggravated with me. And I said, number three, there's an invisible wall 3 feet in front of you. Now, bear in mind, I'd never done this before. It was really just something to try. So I woke everybody up. I said, how's everybody doing? And everybody says, we're great. And this one guy screams, you suck. And I said, what's the problem? He says, this show's terrible. I said, well, then leave. And the guy thinks for a minute. He goes like this. He says, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction. Wow. And he tried to get off the stage. He's pushing and he can't get off. And he's finally frustrated with himself. And I realized something in that moment. I realized he doesn't think he's hypnotized, and yet he's stuck behind this invisible wall.
Right.
And isn't that the case for all of us? We all have our invisible walls. We all have these barriers to our own manifestation, mm-hmm. to our capacity to live the life we mean to live, we hope to live, we deserve to live. And we experience this resistance. And when we can't push through it, what we do is we try to push harder. Mm-hmm. That usually doesn't work. And then we give up and we make excuses for why it's somebody else's fault that we didn't get where we wanted to go. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that those obstacles are never on the outside. They're always on the inside. They're always constructed from our minds and how our minds interact with our environment. And the only way to dismantle an invisible wall is to realize it's invisible. Right. The only way to dismantle it is to awaken, to wake up from the hypnotic trance that you're living in. So wait a minute. All this time I was feeling like I couldn't do this, or all this time I was feeling like it would be impossible to do that. And what if that weren't true? Mm-hmm. And I've been experimenting with this lately, and it's been really fascinating to watch how many things we take for granted as being limitations in our lives. Mm-hmm. Right. Just because we were raised to believe certain things and we just don't question them. And we have subtle fears and anxieties around the things that we think we can't accomplish. I'll give you a couple examples if I may.
Yes,
please.
Okay, so the first one is back in the wintertime. I was standing out here on Lake Champlain. I live in Burlington, Vermont, and out that window is Lake Champlain and Whiteface Mountain straight across the other side. And it's stunning. And in the wintertime, the lake often freezes almost all the way across, or at least a portion of the way across. And then the beachfront right out here has all these swells of ice and snow, and the water itself, the ice itself is really, I mean, it looks like a scene from Antarctica. The mountains on the other side are snow-capped. And I'm standing out there, and it must have been maybe 10 degrees. But I'm wearing a good coat, and I've got a hat on, and I'm standing there, and there's not a soul in sight. I'm the only one. Me and Woody, my doggy Woody, who I'll introduce you to in a little bit. Aww. And we're standing there. We're just looking out at this gorgeous scene. And all of a sudden, I think, okay, I better go in now. And I turn around to leave. And I thought, wait a minute, who said that? Mm-hmm. Right? Because I thought I said it.
Right.
Right? Why did I think I said it? Because the voices that get into our heads become our what we think is the reality of our being. So we think we are our thoughts. But our thoughts have often been habitually planted in us. And so what I realized was that wasn't me, that was Grandma Gussie.
I love it.
My grandma, you better come in or you'll catch your death of cold.
Uh-huh.
And so I just was behaving like you remember the old Popeye cartoons where the smoke would come along and lead them along? So mm-hmm. I was being led along by my own habitual thinking without stepping back from it. Right? So now fast forward to the last month. And I just studied the work of Wim Hof, Wim Hof, the Iceman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, big, big shout out. So for those of you on the call who are here and don't know Wim Hof, you want to look him up, Wimhof. He's from the Netherlands. So he's a Dutch, brilliant philosopher, athlete, and adventurer. And about 25 years ago, after the suicide of his wife, and a deep, deep pool of grief, discovered that he could start to heal his mind and his body from feeling wrecked by it. By the way, I'm getting an echo.
I am too.
Yeah. Maybe if I lower my volume here, would that help?
I was just going to say.
Okay. That he was able to begin this remarkable healing journey by submerging himself in ice water. He went out into the ponds and the lakes in his region, and he started discovering something that nobody else had really put, well, maybe not nobody else, but most other people have never really discovered. And what he discovered for himself was that he was unstoppable, virtually unstoppable. And the things that he thought, or that most of us think are limitations, like cold, are not only not limitations, but can be very powerful allies in our growth and development. Mm-hmm. So for him, he was able to do, he's actually got 26 world records. He climbed Mount Everest in a record amount of time in his shorts. He ran a marathon above the Arctic Circle barefoot.
Wow.
He swam under the polar ice caps and broke the record for swimming underwater in, you know, sub-freezing weather, water. Ah. And he submerged himself in ice water up to his neck for an hour and 42 minutes with no change whatsoever to his body temperature.
Wow.
He's now considered the most studied human being with more physiological data about his experience than anybody else. And what he said right all along is that what I do is something that anybody can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a, I'm not an anomaly. I'm just somebody who's trained myself to recognize that the things that we are averse to, the things we're afraid to confront, when we start to lower our resistance and move towards them, they become our greatest allies.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't just apply to cold. Although with cold, it becomes fascinating because first and foremost, it's something you're going to resist. Get into a nice cold shower. That's not going to be a pleasant minute for you the first time you do it. But what you discover is now I've been doing it for about 3 weeks or so. And now I can get into the shower ice cold. I don't start with hot and go to cold. I just walk into an ice cold shower and I take my whole shower that way. I wash my hair. I wash my body. And so here's something everybody thinks, well, don't you need the water to be warm in order to get clean? No. It turns out that the science shows that you get just as clean in cold water.
Wow.
And you get the added benefit of being able to gradually let go of your resistance so that now if I get into an ice cold shower, I still have a little bit of that initial shock. But after about a minute, the shock and shivering go away. And after about 2 minutes, all perception of cold as a uncomfortable, I mean, I know I'm in cold water, but there's no discomfort at all. I could be in there for an hour. It wouldn't make any difference at all.
Mm.
Right. So that's something we all get to discover in our lives, whether it's with cold or something else. With regard to cold, what was discovered about that modality was that by doing it, he also was able to maintain control over his body temperature, his blood pressure. It helped him heal his emotions. He was also able to develop an exceptionally strong immune system to the point where they've injected him with bacteria and he doesn't get sick. And they've done that to his students and they don't get sick. So what does this tell us? I mean, it's not just go in and take a cold shower, right? It tells us that we are living our lives with an illusion. The illusion is that there's a condition under which we need to live in order to be happy and healthy. And that's a very narrow condition.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that almost anything that you can think of that you thought is that's unacceptable, that you have the power to transform your experience in that environment, in that situation, and have a 180 degree shift in the way you experience it. And not only do you then become masterful in that situation, but you become masterful in all situations, because when you start to realize you have that power, you start to feel more confident. You start to feel, it's almost like, I dare you, universe, to throw me something I can't handle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Instead of being all bundled up in your life and like, yeah, better, I don't want to get out of this chair, because if I get out of this chair, I'm going to get an ache or a pain or like, and people shrink, right? People's lives shrink and those walls come in closer and closer. And you know, what was that line? You get busy living or you get busy dying.
I love that. And these are such great metaphors. And I know you've spoken on stages worldwide and taught people about mindset and mastery. And so I think it's really important that people understand that you're not just talking about things that you've heard from other people either. These are things that you've experienced yourself, that you've taught yourself and seen played out in many, many lives. And so I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about that and some of the, you know, amazing stories that you've seen, things that you've seen happen in people's lives.
Well, for me and for the many other people I've worked with, it's been very exciting. You know, first of all, I grew up pretty unhappy, anxiety ridden, depressed, neurotic, bullied kid with my glasses and my braces and my bad skin and my bad hair and, you know, and no social skills whatsoever. And I just felt bad about myself. And so I started learning about the various strategies and skills that I teach for me. It was for me. I needed it for me. I needed to learn how to quiet my mind. I needed to learn how to be present. I needed to learn how to transcend fear.
And how old were you when you started that? How old were you when you started to learn that?
I'll tell you the very first time it became a possibility for me.
Okay.
13 years old. I'm a very unhappy kid. My mother brings home the record album from Man of La Mancha to dream the impossible dream. And it hit. You know, I felt like no matter who you are, no matter what you do or don't have to offer, you can live by a quest. Yes. You know, you can live by a code. You can have discipline. Discipline is freedom, right? If you could discipline yourself to follow a certain code of conduct, for to behave in a certain way, whether you feel like it or not, then yeah, exactly. So what Chris is saying, you end up taking personal responsibility for the experiences around you. And what does that do? It makes you more responsible, more respectful of others. You know, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. Yeah. To love pure and chaste from afar. All those lines. It's all about, can I be the kind of a person to like put out that kind of energy, regardless of how I'm feeling, because I don't want to operate based on my feelings. And so that, you know, that played out at that time in certain ways. It got me into theater. Theater got me into improvisation. Improvisation got me into presence. Yeah. Presence got me into reading more. Reading more got me into studying and exploring the different ways that I could end misery and suffering inside of myself. That eventually led me to meditation. Meditation led me to a number of other mindfulness-based modalities. And then hypnosis played into that really nicely, because you see, the whole idea of our states of consciousness and how they relate to our ability to get backstage to our own thinking. You know, I'm thinking really bad, disempowering thoughts, but I'm out here noticing that I'm thinking them. That's a whole different thing. Right. If you're sitting in a movie theater and the movie is getting really, really scary, thank goodness you could say, oh, it's only a movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But if you're in your own head and it's getting really scary in there, you got to have a place where you go, oh, it's only a thought.
Yeah. Yeah. But what, you know, okay. So let's back up for a second. When you start talking about that, you know, cause like for myself, when I very first came to the awareness of all of this, was 1997 as a result of a bottom in my life. And I had started to ask those questions. Why am I here? Is this all there is to life? Is pain and suffering and people's judgments? And, you know, and of course, as you spoke about earlier, the conversation that went on in my head, and that reality was very real for me. And so much of it was related around fear, not enough money. And so fast forward after my near-death experience, and I'm experiencing homelessness and, you know, some of these other challenges, but come all the way forward using the tools that you're talking about and the mindfulness that you're talking about, I say to the universe, bring it on.
I was about to say, bring it on. That's exactly the words I was thinking of. The two things I think of, one I think is bring it on. The other thing I think is next.
Yeah.
I'm ready, you know, because none of that stuff has to bring you down. And every one of those experiences you had has made you who you are today, mm-hmm. and made you richer and made you more compassionate and wiser. And that only happens when you detach yourself from the suffering. You see, suffering, there's a difference between pain and suffering, right? Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional, right? So from time to time in our lives, we're going to experience pain. We're going to find ourselves in a low place. We're going to lose loved ones. We ourselves are going to get sick. We're going to have a fight with a friend, and somebody's going to betray us. And all that stuff is going to happen, and it's going to trigger emotions within us. But in that moment, and this is where mindset management comes in. It's this concept of like almost like you're stopping the frames on the film, right? So if you watch the whole film, it's unstoppable. It just keeps on going, and you can't do anything about it. But if you watch it frame by frame, you kind of get in and micromanage it in a way. And in the same way, the moment when you're feeling my life is meaningless, I'm suffering, I'm not going to get anywhere, I have no money and all that, in that moment, what's actually happening is that you're living in your own personal hell. There's a lot of thinking going on. As you said, I think this, I think that, a conversation in my head is this, the story is that. And none of that stuff is real. It all feels real. None of it's real. It's all simply what you're doing with the circumstances in which you're living. There are happy homeless people. There are happy poor people.
Yep.
There are happy dying people. Right.
That's so, I think that's so valuable. And I kind of want to go back a little bit too, because, okay, so you're saying, you know, at 13, you're already having this awakening, which is pretty early in life. So at what point then did this all start to come together for you to actually translate into, you know, how it would impact your life and how you would start to, you know, build this, you know, journey that you've been on to helping others?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that it only took me another, you know, 30 years. And then I finally began to understand this.
But I think that's wonderful, because I think a lot of us relate to that. I mean, I think a lot of us feel like, you know, how come it's taking me so long to kind of figure things out, right?
Well, okay, here's what I do with that. I believe that every one of us has within us, you know, it's our ego, or maybe it's just a part of our ego. There's a structure within us that whose entire job is to make your life a living hell. It's not really its job, but it sort of seems to be its job. Right. And so it's the thinking mind, and the thinking mind always wants to be in charge. It always wants to be in, you know, the part that's defining your experience. So even when you come to assess the thinking that you're doing, it is the thinking mind that's thinking about the way you're thinking, and it's doing it the same way you were thinking. So that's why you get mad about being mad, and you get anxious about being anxious. I can't believe I'm anxious. Oh, my God, this is what causes panic attacks. You're anxious about being anxious. If you could just be like, oh, that's interesting, I'm feeling anxiety. Oh, that's interesting, I'm feeling anger. I wonder what anger feels like. I wonder what anxiety feels like. If you could just be with and observe and notice with equanimity, with non-judgmental awareness, the experience you're having, that experience by its very definition would dissolve away. So when you talk about that voice that says, what's wrong with me? Why is it that it's taken me 30 years to finally get somewhere? You know why? Because that voice won't shut up. The very voice that's saying, why is it taking me 30 years, is the very reason it's taking you 30 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like the old joke about how does the police chief catch the criminal when the police chief is the criminal?
Right.
Right. So the
and
very
so you're
voice
just thinking
that's
about being the observer,
me
really.
Is why it's taking so long. So yeah. What you need to train yourself to do is to notice every time a voice in your head says, what's taking me so long, to say, oh, I get it. Nice try. Uh-huh. Nice try. I'm just going to get quiet, because all of your real wisdom comes in the face of silence. It comes in being able to say, that's a thought, that's a thought, that's a thought. What's real is what's happening right now. I'm breathing. I'm made out of flesh and blood. I'm a physical being in the universe right here, right now. And you know what? And that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say that we can control that part of ourselves, you know, because when that is happening, when that voice is coming in and we're so attached to the emotions of what's showing up in the moment, you know, whether, you know, because for myself, just using myself, trust was one of the things that was hard for me, because I was so tied to feeling that I had been done wrong, you know, and so I was so attached to the emotion. And so now I'm attracting those sorts of experiences. I'm just using this as an example.
This is great. I love it.
And so many people do. They're attracting these experiences day in and day out that are the same kind of experiences, the vicious cycle over and over and over. So how do we stop that and begin to control it in a way that serves us?
Okay. There are two things I need to say, but well, maybe more than two, but so far, I've never been reliable about how many things I need to say. I always say more than I thought I was going. So
go for it.
More is good.
More is good. More is better.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, you brought up a really important point, and that has to do with addiction to emotions.
Mm-hmm.
We are all addicted to our emotions like junkies. Every one of it. We're all junkies. Mm-hmm. And we don't realize it, right? So what happens is that at some point in your life, you had an experience that produced an emotion. You experienced it enough that it became recognizable. Your nervous system basically began firing in a certain way, and nerves that fire together wire together. And so you began to develop a pathway within your own nervous system that says, I've been done wrong. This is, you know, this is just the way it is. People are unreliable. Men suck, whatever it is. This is the, you know, this is the pathway. Now, unfortunately, if that's what your program looks like, it looks like that because if you can manifest experiences that prove you right, you get more of that juice. It's like the junkie, right? I need one more fix. And if I don't find somebody who's going to do me wrong, how am I going to ever feel that feeling? How am I going to ever fire off that emotion? I better hurry up and do something stupid. I better hurry up and get into a bad relationship so I could prove to myself that men suck.
Yeah.
Right? So it's the addiction to emotions and the addiction to thought that produce this effect. So if you start out with a recognition and an understanding that your mind is constantly replaying a certain scenario, and that you're it's happening subconsciously, of course, but what we need to realize, and this is part of the hypnotic process that we teach, is that your conscious mind is only capable of processing about 7 to 10 bits of information at any one time. My phone number is 802-236-3146. What's my phone number?
I knew you were going to say that.
Right? Because you can't do it. But what you can do is you can hone in on one thing. So what you'll hone in on is that, you know, that life is terrible. And so you'll, and then you'll keep on replaying the message. So essentially you are a hypnotist. And you're hypnotizing your subconscious mind from this very limited view of reality that you're proving to yourself is absolute reality, because as long as you program your subconscious mind to believe that that is reality, it will now create a universe in which that is reality. And so now the question is, well, what do you do with that? I mean, how do you break the addiction? Mm-hmm. That's what, because that's the better question is, how do I break the addiction to my mind? Mm-hmm. Right? How do I get back to
that?
How do I get backstage to myself? So I'm just watching this whole thing versus being on stage, like acting it out as if I think it's real, right? How do I do that? And the two words that came to me were necessary strength. Okay. So if you've been going to therapy and like digging into your past and, you know, you've been doing all this stuff, you're telling your story and retelling your story. My personal feeling is, I mean, I've done that for years. I had done that for years. It didn't really get me very far. It gave me some insight. But beyond a certain point, it was just a great place to go and retell my story. Mm-hmm. And to believe that in telling it, I was going to get somewhere. And, you know, because they tell us you need to understand. You need to understand your backstory. Look who's here, Mr. Kenwall. There he is.
Hey, Ken.
So we think we need to understand our backstory, right? And so we need to understand. Werner Erhard said, understanding is the booby prize. Larry, my friend, how you doing, buddy? Larry and I are going to be together here before too long, too. We've been teasing ourselves along. We're going to have a nice show together before too long.
Love Larry.
Larry is everywhere. He's amazing.
I know.
Rockstar.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful. So, so here's what I'm saying is that if you're going to get backstage, you're going to have to develop the necessary strength to notice without being drawn into the experience that's pulling you in. Mm-hmm. So far, so good. How do you develop necessary strength? By strengthening your focus muscles. So meditation is a really powerful thing. I'm sure you teach it and you encourage it. And all those who are here are probably somewhat aware of meditation, although they may not be aware that meditation is not necessarily easy. Mm-mm. Right? I think a lot of people, you say, do you meditate? They say, yeah, I tried it once, but it didn't work. You say, what do you mean it didn't work? Well, I kept thinking. I say, well, duh, you know, that's the whole point. It's like saying I tried lifting weights, but I had to keep putting them back down again.
Right.
It's like you lift them so that you have to put them down, so you have to lift them so you put them down. So it's a constant repetition that gradually starts to change your own neurology. It's the, you know, that neuroplasticity until your mind is able to naturally gravitate toward a more backstage perspective. And so you need to do it because it's the only way you get your life back.
Well, and I think, you know, it's interesting that a lot of these things tie into, and I was actually reading a little bit of Brené Brown earlier, so it ties into, you know, the science that's been done. that shows that, like, a lot of times we get into these scarcity patterns like you're talking about. And so maybe you can talk to us a little bit about prosperity neurology and what that is and how that plays a role in this too.
We could pick up where we left off in terms of walls, the mental and emotional walls. Most of us have a program around money, and that program is deeply embedded in our subconscious minds. And how did it get there? It got there as a result of repetition from early childhood on about what you should and shouldn't do and expect and deserve. And so when you bring that forward and you ask yourself, do I deserve money? Is it impolite to ask for money? I'm working with a woman tomorrow who says, I'm not a receiver, I'm a giver. I give care, I don't take care. It's like, well, that's insanity, right? That's insanity, because how can you keep giving without getting? It's impossible. But if your program is designed in such a way that that's what's going on in your subconscious mind, then you're at odds with yourself, and your nervous system is literally putting up walls to your ability to prosper. And so again, you'll try really hard until you hit the wall. And typically what'll happen, and you see this all the time from individuals who are entrepreneurs or salespeople, they get to a certain point in their careers or a certain goal or a certain milestone moving toward a certain goal. And as soon as they hit that set point, something goes awry, and it doesn't always show up as anxiety and pain. It might show up as boredom. It might show up as distraction. You know, I was really excited about this thing, and I woke up one morning and I thought, who cares? That's just your ego getting, you know, like smoking you. It's making you think that this is of no use to you. So you turn back. So it's that interesting journey that you take, and you get to a point where you now come up against your own nervous system's unwillingness to let you go beyond. And if you don't rewire your nervous system, you're in for a world of hurt. Or you're just going to go back and live inside of your little box, which in itself is a world of hurt, if you keep on feeling like a failure. I wanted to be here, but I'm here, and I don't know why this keeps happening to me. And why am I 30 years old or 40 or 50 or 60 years old still facing the same questions? Well, just because you've been gradually, you know, getting ready to get ready, that's okay. Now is the time, right? Now it's a do-over, right? So prosperity neurology basically means we're going to go through a three-step process with you. And the first step, I call it, this is the unhypnosis process. It's SSS, silence, symbolism, scripting. Silence, symbolism, scripting. Silence. Learn how to get quiet inside, right? Because otherwise, like Sherry was saying before, her brain was noisy with all the reasons that her life was horrible, right? And if you want to get to a place of quiet, you've got to be able to sit right in the eye of that storm. All that stuff's happening, you're just not biting. You're just not buying into it. You're a fish in the water, and all these little drop, you know, worms are coming in, but you know that all those worms are on a hook. So you refuse to let yourself get hooked. And eventually they say, I guess this isn't a good place to fish, and they go away. But it takes a while. So you're practicing that be here now process, because when you do, you become more receptive. Right? I feel that affirmations in and of themselves are not very helpful. I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. I say, I'm great. And then my subconscious says, no, you're not. I say, I'm great. No, you're not. And then I'm at odds with myself, right? It doesn't get me where I want to go. However, if I can get into a state of silence and then I say, I'm great, well, now there isn't another voice contradicting that voice anymore, and now it goes in. So silence, symbolism, we use in linguistics, neurolinguistic programming, we use metaphor quite often. And you can see I talk in metaphors all the time. Everything I do is metaphor. And I can't help it. It's just the way I talk. But we do it to ourselves all the way over and over again. Do-overs, pop-up window ideas. We do this whole thing of thinking we can't have it because we didn't have it before.
Yeah.
So instead we say it's a do-over, it's a brand new day. So now what do I do with all that content? What do I do with this voice? Like, Sherry, what do you do when you're filled with misery, you're filled with fear? Well, you know, I do this on stage quite often if I'm doing a stage hypnosis show, And I'll have a group of people and I'll say, now bear in mind, they've already been hypnotized. So we've already satisfied the first stage, silence. We've already gotten them to a very, you know, blank slate place. And then I say, how many people here are afraid of snakes? They're all afraid of snakes. Everybody's afraid of snakes, right? So I've got a buddy, Colby, and he has a 6-foot python.
Oh.
So he just walks up on the stage with his 6-foot python, and 25 people run off the other side of the stage. They're like, you know, running and screaming away. And then I say, okay, Colby, leave. And he gets off the stage, and all those people come back. And I do a process that takes maybe a minute. And in that minute, what I do is symbolically have them throw away the fear.
Mm-hmm.
Symbolic. Mm-hmm. And there are steps to it. I'm not going to go through the steps, but they're symbolically throwing away the fear. And then Colby comes back on stage with the snake, and all 25 of them line up to meet the snake.
Oh my God.
And they take turns holding the snake and they're petting the snake. I've got a video of a girl kissing the snake. It's like, it's amazing.
I need to try this.
So life on fears, right? So we live our lives, you know, again, in the box,
mm-hmm.
not realizing that there's a way out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Plato's cave analogy, right? You're sitting in the cave, terrified in the cave, but there's an opening right behind you. Get up and leave.
Right.
So silence, symbolism, and then scripting. That's when affirmations could be of some value to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're receptive and empty, and you've symbolically let go of the other stuff, you're not painting on top of a pile of doo-doo,
mm-hmm.
right? You're doing it in an empty space. And so that's where hypnosis can be very valuable, is because it could be a quick process to go silence, symbolism, scripting. And then I take that same individual and I say, okay, now we need to gird your loins. We need you to learn how to sit quietly, regularly, and notice when all this stuff is coming at you, and notice how to use it as grist for the mill. All those things that used to be objectionable are now things that have the capacity to enrich you as a human being. I once did a hypnosis show for a school district, and there were about 1,000 people in the audience, and it was on a gymnasium floor, and all the people watching the show were up in the bleachers, and there are about 1,000 of them on the stage up there, and then I had about 20 kids on the stage, which was the floor of the gym. And as I'm putting them under at the very beginning, and as you listen to my voice, you find yourself going deeper and deeper, becoming more arrested, relaxed, and peaceful, letting go of all the concerns around you. And in that moment, the janitor had been pushing a cart full of 20, I think about 150 metal folding chairs, and it fell over. Like this completely, you know, disruptive sound, and it echoed through the auditorium. And in that moment, I could have said, shit, you know, what's the matter with you? You just ruined my show. And that would have been the default thing for anybody to do. And I said, and as you hear the sound of the falling chairs, it takes you deeper. What do they know? Right?
Right.
So that's true for all of us. So like you're getting an ice water and you say, and as the cold water touches my body, I feel more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And as I walk through this wooded path and all the mosquitoes are swarming around my face, I feel peaceful and loving. And I send blessings of love to all the mosquitoes. And I just keep walking, and I don't do one of these because these actually attract more mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
So how often are we doing this in our lives, attracting negativity by trying to push it away?
Right.
Right. Instead, just like take that stance that as I walk through this challenging experience, I can experience nothing but love and appreciation. And I can always look for the positive in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something good that's coming. And Sherry, you would not be the person you are had you not been through what you were through. You wouldn't be as rich and as beautiful and as loving and as wise if you hadn't gone through that,
mm-hmm.
and come out the other side.
Yeah, so true, because so much of it too was tied to the old, I like to call it the limiting beliefs of my mother and my father. On one level, my father was a multimillionaire, so he was an overachiever, mm-hmm. but he didn't give anything to us kids. I mean, he didn't give us money. He didn't help us out with anything. And then on the other level, my mother was, you know, there's not enough money. And so, you know, the and the issues with the men. So, you know, I always had stepfathers that were 6 years older than me or the same age as me. And there was all that dialogue going on in my head. And so I resorted to romance novels as a way to escape, because the romance novels connected me and aligned me with those emotions of joy and happiness and the belief that there was something better on the other side.
That's amazing. I mean, think about what it took for you to discover and then use that as a tool for yourself at that time, which is wonderful. I was talking to somebody yesterday about a young girl who's being bullied, and she's kind of awkward and she's going through a really hard time. And somebody said to me, what would you say to your younger self? And I'd say, don't believe that this is the real end all be all of your life, that there is something beyond. There's another level of consciousness and there's another level of happiness that's waiting for you. And just, you know, you're going to have to go through some tough times, but, you know, so did Ulysses, you know, so we all have our hero's journey, and some of us have to live it very early in our lives.
I like that you said that, because, you know, when I first awakened for myself, all of a sudden I heard sound and tone in a different, completely different way. And for example, music, the hero, any rendition of the hero song that had ever been, you know, that had ever been created, started showing up in my moments, in my present moments. And as if the words in each of the songs were speaking specifically to me, to give me the courage to keep taking another step and to strengthen that inside me, that I wasn't alone, you know, that everything that I needed was showing up moment to moment.
So that's beautiful. And I think that's a really good kind of a touch point for everybody to think, you know, those songs were always there, right? Most of them are pretty popular songs.
Yes.
But they started showing up. What they really did was they started showing up in your subconscious. They started making it past the filter of your conscious mind. How did they do that? Well, they did that because at some level you did something right. Mm-hmm. You made a decision. Yeah. You know, my decision is I'm going to live a bigger, richer, more loving life. I don't know how the hell I'm going to do that, but I'm going to ask for it, right? Asking it is given. So that basically means I'm asking my subconscious mind to start changing the way the filters work. You know, you buy a new car, all of a sudden everybody's got the same car. Well, you buy a new life, all of a sudden all the opportunities for a new life are there too. I've got lots of those stories.
Uh-huh.
And those are really, really cool things. They're the affirmation of the inherent magic of the universe. The inherent beauty of how everything sort of works when you open to it, because you're only seeing this much of what life has to offer. And if you're seeing this much of it and you're pointing it toward negativity, that's a very painful life. But if at least start pointing it this way and simultaneously beginning opening up your perception, then more and more magic happens.
I love that. And one of my favorite questions, and I got this from a mentor a few years ago, is it possible that there is a different story than the one I'm telling myself? Because I think a lot of times we get that tunnel vision.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we can only see what we've already seen. And so I've always kind of loved that question. And I feel like what you're sharing with us is a way of taking that question and expanding on it.
That's amazing. I love that. And I'm going to remember, say the question again, because that one is going to definitely get some airplay.
Is it possible that there is a different story than the one I'm telling myself? And I will credit Mark von Mueser for that, who, by the way, is amazing. Yeah. If you haven't heard of him, you should go look him up. But that was a game changer for me. That really changed my perspective on so many things. But I love what you're sharing, because I think it opens it up even more when you take that question and you go into a really quiet space with it and you do some of the things that you're talking about. That's so powerful.
Yeah, it's just, you know, what I'm bringing to the table as a companion to that kind of inquiry is receptivity, being more receptive. So it is really a question of state. As Tony Robbins, if you change your state, you change your fate. So, you know, it's really opening to being in a state of consciousness where inquiry is possible. But again, these are important inquiries. Brené Brown, you mentioned, you know, is it true? How do I know it's true? Is there another way to look at it? These kinds of questions are really life-changing, because we're so in the habit of thinking and asking the questions in a certain way. And the quality, I think it was also Tony who said that, you know, the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your questions.
Mm-hmm. Dr. John DeMartini said the same thing.
Oh, John says that. Yeah, that's awesome.
He said the quality of questions you ask yourself determines the quality of life you live.
There you go. Well, let's credit John with that. I remember John when he first started doing motivational speaking. He is a chiropractor. There are three people that I know of who have, you know, gone from being chiropractors to being personal development gurus and hypnotists. And one of them is me. One of them is Joe Dispenza. One of them is John DeMartini.
I love him. I interviewed him on a show I had years ago. And I actually got to sit and have dinner with him. And he's a pretty amazing person. The story, just like yourself, the stories are what really invite you in to be able to tap into that you're describing. When we talk about these states of mind and these shifts in consciousness, I'm visual and kinesthetic. So, you know, I learned from another mentor years ago, he started addressing everybody in their learning styles so that everybody could conceptualize, you know, the information he was describing. And I feel very much that you are doing the same thing.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I feel like any of us who are trying to impact the way people think, what people see, what we are is translators, right? There's wisdom is wisdom, right? I mean, whether you get it from Buddhism or Christianity or Judaism or from, you know, or a Bowery bum who just happens to have come upon it hard won, wisdom is wisdom, but it's not always easy to apply it and understand where it applies to your real life. So we are meant to take these principles and make them easy to absorb and see how they apply in our lives.
Wow. Yeah, that's really, you know, and I think for a lot of people, we're kind of in this place right now where we're all sort of seeking answers. You know, we're looking for more wisdom, you know, going forward at how can we do things better. And I love that there's simplicity to what you're saying. That it can be as simple as just go into that moment and let yourself be there for a little bit. Like, it doesn't have to be more than that.
No, and I'm not smart enough to make it complex. So I've got to go with simple. Simplicity is really the answer. It's most of us have been trained in our lives to believe we need more. We need, you know, we need to look at it from 1,000 different angles. We need to, we need to understand the psychological ramifications. And most of the time, what's fascinating is, and this comes also from my work as a chiropractor, back in the day when I was doing physical work with people, you know, you'd meet somebody who had some long-held difficulty, whether it's a healthcare problem or an emotional problem. There's always a physical component, right? So you would treat somebody, you would treat somebody, and then all of a sudden, this long-held spinal problem would release, and all of a sudden they'd say, I just remembered where that came from. Because they didn't remember where it came from, right? But then when the physical problem went away, the memory came back. So the idea is this, I mean, this is kind of a metaphor, but it's kind of true, is that we hold our memories in our bodies, right? And so all those holding patterns are what are keeping it. So we're sitting there saying, I've got to figure out why this happened. What happened? I've got to figure it out. And we're living in our head trying to figure it out, where all we need to do is just kind of fix it in the body. We need to like release the tension and then we have access to the wisdom that was there all along. And that's been true in my hypnosis also, because some hypnotists believe you need to, you know, do hypno analysis. I've got to take you back to the first time you ever felt that thing. And I'm a bad subject for that myself, because my memories are not easily accessible to me. I don't have a lot of, you know, specific memories of my periods of trauma. But if I can sit in meditation and I could sit with a discomfort long enough, it begins to dissolve and change. And as it begins to dissolve and change in the absence of thought, it's just observation, then somehow the wisdom comes, somehow the memory comes. It's, you know, we got it backwards, right? We're all busy trying to figure something out so we can fix it. I say fix the mood before you fix the mess.
And that comes down to being consciously aware in the moment, because when you talk to people about, you know, something as simple as being present in the moments of today, you know, they get so tied into thinking they're going to lose out on something because they're either tapped, you know, like Dispenza says we're in 95% of the past in today, and the future hasn't happened yet. And he says, and then we're putting out all this bits of information that is, you know, an illusion, instead of just what you're describing, is just being still and becoming the observer. I mean, one of the things for myself that I do is I start to go into speaking who I really am. Who I really am is a person that travels all over the world and helps people of all ages tap into their own greatness. Woo, as I speak that, I just had chills all over me.
I was just gonna say, look how you just lit up as soon as you said that. Talk about high vibration nation.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's that. And I go to deeper and deeper and deeper levels because my truth is tapping people in, you know, igniting them and filling them up, you know, into that vision of who they truly are, the real them that lights them on fire.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's, and I think that's what lights all of us up, right? That's the beauty of the kind of work we do, and the fact that we've assembled a community of brilliant individuals like Mr. Swanson here. Big shout out for our buddy Eric, who is meeting each other in the first place. And of course, Eric has the Habitude Warrior Conference. I've spoken on his stages. Sherry, I don't know if you. I think you're now part of the Mastermind program,
yes,
aren't you?
Yes.
God bless you for doing that. I thanks you, Eric. I so appreciate that you're part of that community now. It's going to be such a big gift for others in you, you know, kind of peeling away more and more layers. So you're nothing but that glowing being. I mean, look at the way Eric moves through the world with that kind of high vibrate. Like, I don't know anybody who vibes like him. People are always like, is he on drugs? What is the deal with that dude? But he's not, you know, he's just, he's high on life. He's high vibration. Yeah. And understands the importance of monitoring his own vibration. And, you know, I've seen Eric like face difficulties in his life. And, you know, if his vibration gets low, he knows I got to pump it up. I've got to get there. And that's what we all do. We know we've got something to give. Peel the layer. Exactly. And what's behind it, right? Because we're all like an onion. It's like we've got all the stuff. They say, you know, in the end, it's all okay. So if it's not okay, it's not the end.
He has to leave you with another comment here.
I am people's drugs. Rock on, my friend.
I know.
It's been a pleasure. It's been this past year and a half, I've spent, you know, lots and lots and lots of quality time with Eric on a bunch of stages. And I was also teaching workshops around the country, introducing people to the Habitude Warrior community. And so we'd be on debriefing calls together almost daily. And it's super fun. Pick us. Peel the layer, baby. It may be misconstrued, Eric. I'm not sure that's going to work. Like you may want to hold that one off for just a few, you know. A few
minutes. Tell him.
Oh, man.
So tell us a little bit more about your book. You know.
Yeah, so this newest book, I just happen to have it right here.
Okay.
Bulletproof. And it's got an interesting history. So the book is... Bulletproof is, what if everything that bugged you, blocked you, or brought you down, which is everything, didn't, right? Same life, same stuff, same crap going on around us, same pandemic, same, you know, family gatherings that we barely survive, all the stuff, right? All the stuff that's bugging us and blocking us and bringing us down. What would it look like? What would your life be like if you were able to unconditionally choose happiness, if you were able to live by your code, by your quest to dream your impossible dream, if you were able to practice what we've been talking about here today to strengthen your focus muscles, right? If you were able to lean in, I've got another metaphor to share with you.
Yes.
How are you doing on time? Do I need to like get talk quick or something?
You got about. Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. I went to Disney World several years back, and they at Epcot Center, I don't know if they still do this, but they used to have this light show at night. And there's a big fountain, and the fountain would push up a big spray of water. It was ginormous, like 100-foot tall spray of water, maybe like 200 or 300 feet across. So you're sitting out there, and you're looking at this spray of water, and then there's all kinds of colors appearing on it. And then all of a sudden, it's the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Mickey Mouse and the Sorcerer and the music, and it's like very intense. Right? It's like, whoa. Wow. And you're like, oh my God. And if you're a little kid, that's got to be scary.
I bet.
Right. And so what I was thinking in that moment was, if you're there watching that light show and it's big and it's noisy and it's scary and it's a projection and it scares you and you want to run away. Mm-hmm. Well, that's like life.
Yeah.
Right. You, and you're the projector. You're projecting this image onto a spray of water. It's ephemeral. It doesn't have any solidity to it, right? But it looks very, very real. Your life back when you were miserable was looking very, very real. You were projecting negativity onto this giant screen of water and then running from it. And then, but somehow fascinated by it. But you know what? If you wanted to like really overcome the fear, you know what you would do? You'd walk towards it. And all of a sudden, you'd just be in a spray of water.
Right.
And then before long, you'd be on the other side of the spray of water. And so if you're suffering, if you're in pain, if you're anxious, if you're in any way falling short of your goals for yourself, what if you leaned in? What if, you know, the next time you had a fight with somebody, you leaned in, meaning you didn't try to fix the other person. You didn't try to fight your way out of a paper bag that you can't get out of. You just like let yourself experience it, right? And found that there was another side to it and that there was a gift in that experience. So that's part of what this book, Bulletproof, is about, is like reframing. So again, you're choosing happiness. You're living by a code. You're learning to focus so that you have this necessary strength we talked about earlier. You're then using that strength to be able to lean in and have the faith to not go into a state of resistance, but instead let go of resistance and move in and then ultimately through. And then the last part of it is, what kind of a support system have you set up for yourself? What does your world look like? Do you have people who are good, what I call, in this book, I call them life rafts or lifeboats. Right? So I say, assemble your lifeboats. Who are the people? Because I've got some people in my life when, let's say I had a fight with somebody, I'm going to call them up and they're going to be like, yeah, that person is a jerk. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people who are able to say more about that. What do you feel? Like, really get that out of your system. Like, let yourself feel it. And, you know, that hold me to task and hold me to it until I don't take the low road, because they're helping me take the high road. Right? So surround yourself with those people. Dan Clark says, you become the average of the five people you spend most of your time with. That means that if you spend most of your time with five depressed people, you're going to be the sixth. Right. So, you know, who are you? What's your support system? And not only the people, but also the systems you have in place. What book do you pick up when you need to? What writing do you do when you need to? What meditative practice do you jump into when you need to? Sometimes you're not strong enough. You don't have the necessary strength to do the right thing, to not jump into the fight with somebody else. That's why alcoholics have sponsors, right? Who are your sponsors? I'm a pilot, and sometimes when you're flying, if you get into an emergency situation, that could be scary, right? So your mental attitude, exactly, your positive mental environment, which has to do with, that's a system. You've built a system to allow you to change the trajectory of the situation. So now when the emergency happens, I pull down the visor and there's a checklist, right? Check the pitot tube, check the power, check the RPMs. Call the tower. Because you're not thinking clearly in those moments. Right. You're not really thinking clearly when you're upset, right? So you need your systems. Anyway, that's all what this book is about. It's awesome. I'm very proud of it. I've got a quote from our buddy who's here now, our buddy Eric on the bottom there, Sharon Lecter from Rich Dad Poor Dad, Jeff Hoffman, the founder of Priceline, and the foreword was written by the founder of Make-A-Wish Foundation.
And
we have a little gift for you guys, right? So I think the bit.ly link there, I'm not mistaken, takes you to my mailing list. And if you sign up on the mailing list, you get a free digital download of the first chapter of the book. And so you get to try before you buy. And then there's a link at the bottom of that that'll send you over to Amazon. And if you then send me your Amazon receipt, I'll send you a free digital download of my first book, which is on hypnosis.
Oh,
wow.
So a lot of value there.
I bought the book when you very first released it.
Wow, thank you. I'm so glad you became a fan early in the process.
Yes, indeed.
And an ambassador, and I'm so glad that I'm here with you guys now. And boy, you guys draw a really good crowd. I mean, I can't believe some of the people who popped in here and said hi. These are some heavy hitters.
Oh, heck yeah.
You have an amazingly positive environment.
Yes, you do.
We're very fortunate.
I love it.
And very fortunate to have you on today. What a joy. So much amazing wisdom that you've shared out with us. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope we do it again sometime.
Absolutely. We absolutely do it. We want to thank every single one of our listeners and our audience. Thank you for sharing this out as always. And thank you, Dr. Steve. We really appreciate you being on the High Vibe Nation with us tonight. You can all find us on the High Vibe Nation at www.thehighvibenation.com. You can find us on Instagram at the High Vibe Nation. You can find us on Facebook at the High Vibe Nation. And until next Monday, have an amazing rest of the week. Thank you all very much.
Good night, everyone.
Night.
From everybody here at the High Vibe Nation, we want to say thank you for choosing to raise your vibration. And of course, please like, share, and subscribe. If you need to find us on the web, check us out at www.thehighvibenation.com. Looking forward to seeing you on the next episode, and keep high vibing.